when I was a student here in 1935 and the following years, there were essentially three mathematicians in the pure mathematics department. That was Hopf, Blancherel, and Polya. And everything, all courses were given by these three people in changing roles. Once one would give algebra, the other would give topology, and the third would give analysis, and they would change their roles, and they would not feel very much at ease if they were not in their own role. So Polya tried to teach us group theory, but it was a very difficult task, obviously, for him, and we tried to help him a little bit, because he had done interesting things about groups and combinatorics and the relation, you know, the chemical compounds and so on. But to teach group theory, like he used to teach analysis, that was impossible, because axioms were not his real strength. We were always, since we were a small group of students, we were present sitting in a coffee hall and drinking coffee, and then Hopf would tell that, Blancherel would say that alcohol is forbidden for mathematicians, because Blancherel was a man of very strict habits and very serious man. And Hopf said, no, I enjoy alcohol very much. You know, once we had a big reception in Warsaw with vodka and all kind of schnapps, and we used to drink, and after that I gave my talk. And everybody said that never I had given such a good talk as after that reception. St. Blancherel said, that's very simple to explain, because all of the attendants also had all that alcohol.
Very nice story.
Hermann Weyl was not at theater anymore when I was a student. Some of the things he had introduced here, like linear algebra in the very beginning of the curriculum, and a way of teaching complex variables, Riemann surfaces, that had remained from his tradition, but he was already in Princeton. Mm-hmm. And it was only after, much later, when he retired from the institute, that he came in 1950 to Zurich and gave courses here on a completely private basis. He was not at all officially connected with the ETH. Mm-hmm. He got married here for a second time and lived in Zurich till 1955. Mm-hmm. So I knew him only when I was already a professor at the ETH. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had met him before in Princeton, on my first visit to Princeton. The Forschungsinstitut idea came up in 1963. We always have had some visitors here, academic visitors, not too many. They were just here to spend a semester or a year to work with Hopf or with Blancherel when he was still active. Later on, with in other fields, with Stiefel, but there was no organization to take care of these visitors. They were just left on their own, and we thought that we should have a real program for inviting visitors. In those fields which are not really strongly represented here, or, in the contrary, in those fields which are strongly represented. When I went with this idea to the Swiss Mathematical Society to support such a plan, the Swiss Roman said, no, by no means. This thing cannot be done in Zurich. It has to be done either in both parts of Switzerland or else or else only in the French part of Switzerland. Now, since I had been a professor in Lausanne before, I understood their viewpoint very well, and I said, okay, let's forget about the whole idea, and I went to see our ETH authorities. And when I submitted this question to the president of the ETH, his answer simply was, yes, no problem. No, he said, I understand very well what you want. How much money do you need for the first year? And you just start without any rigid administrative organization. Just start and try what you can do. So our first thing was to invite several people. That was Chandrasekharan, Lipman Behrs, Raghavan Narasimhan, and Wormer. The analyst were. And with these people we started. We got some temporary offices which now are called the Hermann Weyl Zimmer, but it was in a very primitive style. They had no library, no secretary, but they liked it very much, and the next year we could increase the whole operation. We introduced the most important part of the Forschungsinstitut, which was the daily small tea in the tea room and the weekly big tea in the bigger seminar room, where all mathematicians would get together and meet each other and meet the guests. And within a short time, we could increase the whole range of visitors to about 20 per year. Now it's 30, and it will probably be 40 very soon. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Forschungsinstitut für Mathematik at Zurich is an annex to the mathematics department in the Abteilung für Mathematik und Physik. It has no permanent members. It's only as a director who, this is an additional small charge, and they are only, it's only meant for guests. And the main organizational importance is the complete flexibility. Every professor of the mathematics department can make suggestions for inviting guests, and so far we could really carry through all reasonable suggestions that have been made. And this is a supplement towards the possibilities of our teaching staff, because we have more students than we actually could handle as PhD students, and the contacts with these guests are very important for our graduate students. In many cases, they have even written theses suggested by guests who came here, either on a semester, or on a full year, or on a few months basis. In addition, of course, we always invite people if one of our faculty members want to write joint papers or a joint book with a person. This is one important good reason for inviting people. And so we had permanently a very big additional activity organized through the Forschungsinstitut. You may have seen this weekly bulletin, which includes average of 2 seminars per day, in addition to the Zurich Colloquium, where you gave a talk, very much appreciated, informative talk, and then a colloquium of the ETH, which is a little bit more specialized, but also meant for a general audience. The organization of these seminars has also become one of the duties of the Forschungsinstitut staff. And in addition, we have room for 2, 3, at most 4 very gifted young research mathematicians, either PhDs from our own school or people we invite. They can stay here 1 year, exceptionally 2 years, and then they are replaced by other visiting members. We always thought that there is no need for permanent members of that Forschungsinstitut, because the faculty members of the mathematics department are present here and they participate in all these activities. Now, the flexibility is very important because this means that guests can propose their own dates for the visit. They are not at all involved in any semester programs. Mm-hmm. And even during vacation, if a sufficiently large group is present, we also can have these guests. And it's as little red tape as possible. If an invitation is being organized, is being discussed, then that's all. There are no other decisions. It has to be agreed upon by the administration, of course, but so far it has never been refused.
And you have probably much less red tapes than in France. They are able in Paris, for example, to invite people that they need to get a confirmation from Ministry of Higher Education, and this takes time, so it has to be done in advance, a few months and so on.
I don't want to say unpleasant things about the country, but probably my own experience in Paris was one of the reasons why I invented this extremely flexible system here in Zurich. And it is, of course, it was a good matter of luck that our authorities understood this. We have had visitors before. I mean, this whole idea was not at all new. ETH has always been a center for visitors, but very few, and not on a really organized basis. Okay. Nobody was responsible for their well-being and for the contacts and for the seminars. So I think it was a very natural thing to do, but I took the initiative, and I had then to carry the administrative load, of course.
Are these guests involved in any way into teaching courses for graduate or undergraduate students, or
no,
not usually?
No, not within the ordinary framework of the Forschungs Institute. It's either guests are here for being in Zurich, whether they give a seminar on research level or not, that is their own choice, but of course we always hope that they do so. And people can only be accepted above the PhD. So the younger PhDs we have here, they of course should not be involved in teaching. They should really concentrate on their research. They are sometimes beginners or just at the moment where they get their most important first work being done. But very recently we have added to the activities institution of postgraduate, that means post-diploma courses. Mm-hmm. In the average there should be two per semester, and those people invited by the department now for these semester courses will automatically also be guest members of the Forschungs Institute in order to be incorporated in that framework. Mm-hmm. But this is only a small part, said, of the Institute. But it will be an important addition to the teaching activities of the department. We have practically no postgraduate real teaching courses. Mm-hmm. And this has started right in this semester for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we hope that you will come for another such graduate post-diploma course.
Mm-hmm.
It had been an old tradition since the existence of this mathematical school to appoint people from abroad who had a very strong influence on mathematics in Switzerland. So what I remember, not from my own time, but from long before, there were here people like Christoffel, Hermann Amandus Schwarz, Frobenius, Minkowski. I should also mention Dedekind, of course, before. Some of these Horwitz, some of these returned to Germany after a shorter or longer stay in Zurich, but their influence, of course, was very strong. And one of the biggest influences was certainly Hermann Weyl, who was here from 1913 to 1930. And the mathematics program for mathematicians was really made under his influence. And it is still more or less what he had introduced, which was extremely advanced compared to mathematics curriculum at other universities in most parts of Europe. Then after, at the same time with Hermann Weyl, there was Blancherel. Blancherel was then one of my own teachers, Heinz Hopf and Bolya. And Heinz Hopf, of course, created a very big school all over the world, but some of his people and many of the mathematicians in Switzerland were very strongly influenced by Heinz Hopf. We also had, not as a full professor, but as an associate member of the department at that time, Bernays, at the University of Zurich. There was always a close cooperation with universities. There were Fuetter and Speiser, and later on van der Waarden, Alfors for a short time, Nevan-Lindau, and Finzler.
Finzler. At the university.
At the university. But the moment, to get back to the Forschungsinstitut, we had arranged this weekly meeting of all mathematicians of Zurich. Everybody came on the Tuesday afternoon, and once I had a guest here from Canada, one of our younger collaborators, and I told him, look around, here is, may I introduce you, this is Blancherel, this is Bernays, this is Finzler, and then he shook his head and said, and where is Gauss? Because Blancherel's name is a classic for people. His papers were written, in famous papers, in 1912 or so, and after that he was a very good teacher, but did really not publish much. Also, I was his assistant for one year or 2 years, so I knew he knew everything, but he did not really do further research work at that time. So people thought this must be different Blancherel. It's impossible that it's the same. He was active till about 80, at the age of 80. And since the beginning of the Forschungsinstitut, just to list some names which come through my mind now, not at all complete, we had Chandrasekharan, Lippmann Behrs, Raghavan Narasimhan, we had Sridharan from Tata Institute, Milner was here. I had personally several contacts with Russian mathematicians, first by correspondence with Potryagin, with whom I then later on met several times in the executive committee of the International Mathematical Union when I was secretary of the International Mathematical Union.
So can you confirm his statement about his fight in the International Union against Zionists? He really tried to fight?
I can confirm that it's fully invented. I know the whole history of that, of how Jacobson became a member of the executive committee. I was not secretary anymore at that time, but I still was involved. They asked my advice and so on. And when Albert died, then we had to replace him for a remaining period of 2 years. And so the natural choice was to ask the president of the American Mathematical Society, who was Jacobson at that time, to replace Albert for the remaining period of 2 years as vice president in the executive committee of the union. After Jacobson accepted, I remember he was here in Zurich and we had to convince him, but only under the conditions that he could leave after 2 years, that he would not become president of the union. And when these 2 years were over, it was, of course, an act of politeness that one asked him whether he wants to become president of the Union. And he said no. And that was all. And Pontryagin later on declared this as that he had prevented the Zionist plot to make Jacobson president of the Union. So it is really substantially wrong, and of course the formulation is much worse even than the wrong statement.
But have you had a chance to see any unusual, say, activity of Pontryagin in this union, or he was not very active there?
What I can say is this. When I was secretary, first, Paul Alexandrov was member, the Russian member of the executive committee, and we had extremely good cooperation. He tried to carry through what the union decided in the Soviet Union. And one of the things that was achieved during that time was to make Russia a member of the International Union through his cooperation with the Academy, etc., in Russia. Then I was secretary at the following General Assembly of the International Mathematical Union, where the Russian delegation was present, which included Sobolev, who was also pretty much cooperative, but not of the same type as Paul Alexandrov. And then came the replacement of Alexandrov by Pontryagin. I think it was immediately. Maybe there was someone in between, that I don't remember. But of course, with Pontryagin was very difficult. So first of all, from the language viewpoint, it was not easy, and he had a very complicated and rigid viewpoint. Then I left as secretary, and I do not know exactly how things continued. I think Lavrentyev was then the representative of the Russia in this executive committee. But the difficulties, of course, started from the very beginning when the International Mathematical Congress invited Russian mathematicians on the official basis, and half of them were not allowed to attend. And this has remained so during all these years. It is still so. It was still so at the last Congress. And this is certainly a reason why Jacobson would tell Pontryagin, his fellow in the executive committee, that this was not possible this way of doing things, and this is probably this why they became sort of enemies. That's all I can explain. Otherwise, the whole matter between Pontryagin and Jacobson is simply a stupid affair. That's all I can say.